Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our monthly managed care call, joined by our friends at Molina Healthcare this morning. Today is May 10th, 2023. I'll start like I normally do. I'll run through a couple info letters quick. I'll be brief with them. If you'd like to get a more detailed update, you can listen to our previous call. As far as most, the one I want to talk about the most, I suppose, during this call is info letter 2459. It is the Molina Provider Contracting and Training letter, basically announcing, again, Molina Healthcare is joining the Health and Human Services team of the rest of the MCOs effective July 1, 2023. And so it talks about, you know, some of the member choice and MCO assignment that's going on right now. The MCO onboarding page is a page that we would obviously recommend that you check out. Contracting is obviously well underway with the team over there trying to get providers on and getting to network adequacy. And so wanting to make sure that there's contact information for you there if that's something that you still need to go through. I know that if you want to do any claims testing, you would likely need to have an executed contract by now in order to ensure that that's rolling for you. I'm not sure on the opportunities of that, but we can go into all of that with the team here this morning. So lastly, I guess, as far as info letters, just wanting to point out again that IL 2461 is for a home health listening session that is going to be occurring on May 22nd from 4 to 5:30. This is where providers of home health are able to share any challenges that they're currently experiencing providing home health services. And if there's any, if you know of any solutions that are that could be applied and used to improve that experience for that provider group as we, as a state, continue to try to enhance and beef up the services for home and community-based providers and our home health agencies. So again, IL 2461, you need to register, and that is included within that info letter. And then lastly, the HCBS waiver eligibility, that's 2453, IL 2453, talks about some of the policies pertaining to the waiver programs. And so we talked about that a little bit more on our last call. But I would definitely recommend taking a look at that and seeing if any of that applies to you, if you're a waiver provider. So with that, I'm going to pause. We'll see if anyone from the team at Molina has any updates or announcements or anything like that to kick us off.
Hey, Brandon, it's Tom. Say, do you mind if I just run through a few things here and kind of tee up some items we'd like to talk with you about?
That would be great.
I know you had sent some questions in advance, and I think we're prepared to answer those questions towards the end and any other questions that your membership may have. So you touched a little bit upon contracting. Contracting, we are well underway, tracking towards network adequacy and on target for that. And I think you mentioned claims testing in there. So I want to talk a little bit about contracting, claims testing, and then also introduce Jill Villalobos here in a minute or two, who is our VP of Health Services. Just to talk with you a little bit about what we, you know, Molina's philosophy around case management, some of the activities that we currently have underway and how we'd like to work with providers going forward. And then we'll pass it to Ron Dean just to give a little more information on the provider orientation sessions that are currently underway, and then to really dig into the questions that were submitted. So first piece, contracting, like I said, we're tracking towards network adequacy, hoping to get all contracts in by the end of the month and sooner if at all possible. So anyone that's out there that is wanting to contract with Molina and has not done so yet. You know, if we get into June, we run the risk of not being able to get providers through credentialing and also get them configured in time for a July 1 start date. And so really encouraging providers at this point to reach out to us if you haven't been talked to about contracting or you have questions relative to the agreement so that we can get you contracted and into the queue for system load and credentialing. And so really want to encourage people to help us move you into our systems quicker than waiting to June, because if we get into June, we really do run the risk of not being able to get you configured in time for July 1. That kind of takes us into the claims testing. At this point, we are not taking additional. I mean, if you don't have a signed contract today, we cannot get you into claims testing. I know we have had some nursing facilities and home health express some interest in doing claims testing. The volume of claims testing that we are seeing is on the light side on both of those, and we really want to get some claims tested. So if you registered for claims testing with Molina and you have yet to submit some claims to us, and you are from a home health agency or you are from a nursing facility, we'd really like to see some claims come through so we can test our configuration there and make sure that we are ready to go July 1. But Ron Dean can keep me honest here, but the volumes on both of those have been extremely low at this point and would really like to see some additional claims from home health or a nursing facility. The last thing I want to address, and I know that we've seen a few cases of this occur over the last couple of weeks, is and we totally understand the situation. There have been some cases where providers are advising members who were assigned to Molina to stay with their existing MCO. And we understand some of the reservations around standing up a third MCO, but we also at the same time think that Molina is going to bring some things to market that providers will really like, but you have to give us a chance. And, you know, we're willing to earn your trust and earn your endorsement of what we're doing today and what we are bringing to the market. But at the same time, we're seeing some significant losses in our LTSS membership. And we have some tangible examples where providers were redirecting back to existing MCOs. And so, we're just asking you to give us a chance. If you're a provider and you want to, you know, want to have a better understanding as to what it is we're bringing to market, that's part of the reason I asked Jill to join the call today, is to really give you an understanding as to what we hope to deploy in our case management and how we want to work with providers to service these members. We want to be the preferred MCO. We know we have to build that trust, but in order to get there, you're going to have some trust with the trust in us out of the gates. And so, Jill, if you wouldn't mind, kind of give folks a introduction to your background and talk a little around what we're hoping to deploy in the market for case management.
Absolutely, Tom. Thank you so much for letting me join today. Just by background, I am a registered nurse and have spent the bulk of my career on the provider side in metro health systems, as well as small rural health systems, home health and hospice agencies, kind of you name it, across the state. So this is my first MCO. So the entirety of the rest of my career has been spent on the provider side. Our approach to case management is really an integrated approach model. That means our case managers will be expected to meet the needs or address the needs of the whole person, behavioral health, physical health, social determinants of health, all of their needs. So from a provider standpoint, you won't need to deal with multiple case managers for a particular member, you'll deal with one who will work with you and partner with you to bring solutions, options, and resources that help your lives be easier and help make the member's life better. We also expect our case managers to be out in the field. That means we want them spending time with the members, getting to really know them and getting to know their personal and professional caregivers, as well as being in your offices and agencies and getting to know you and building a relationship of trust and partnership with you as well. I've told our case managers I will be doing ride-alongs with them this summer and fall. And kind of my litmus test is they should have built enough of a great relationship with you and your care teams that when I walk in with them to your office, the front desk folks know who they are by name and know what they're there to talk about. If they haven't built that relationship that well, then we've got some work to do. So that's, we really want to be present and we want to be engaged and we want to collaborate with you to make sure the goals and outcomes you want for your patients, our members, are ones that we're helping you work with. So that's super important to us. Our case managers are located in 13 regions to cover the entire state. We know that healthcare is local, and so we have hired case managers who live in all regions of the state so that they know the local healthcare community and know the local healthcare providers. All of our case managers are experienced case managers. You may recognize many of them. We've been lucky to have case managers from some of the other MCOs choose to join us, in large part because of the culture around case management that we've built, that integrated model. The feedback that we've gotten from our case managers is, this is how case management is supposed to be. I'm supposed to know my members. I'm supposed to know their providers. I'm supposed to be their partner and advocate, and I'm supposed to be able to bring resources to them. And so they're super excited about our approach. And we're maintaining our case manager case ratios at a level that will allow them to be very interactive and be present with members and providers. Our case managers are also currently doing provider visits in collaboration with Tom and Rondine's team. So going out, introducing Melina, giving a brief overview and introducing themselves. So you will see them across the entire state over the coming weeks if you haven't seen them already. And then one of the other key things I want to highlight is our 90-day auth waiver plan. So we are trying to make our implementation as easy and painless as we can from a provider and member standpoint. And so we're waiving the majority of authorizations for the first 90 days. We're also honoring any authorization that was in place from one of the prior MCOs. We're loading those into our system, and we're also doing a warm handoff with the other MCOs. So those members who are coming from one of the other MCOs to us, we're going to have a conversation with that MCO case manager, get to know the member, understand what their already authorized services and providers are, ensure those are all loaded in our systems, so that we will honor those for the previously approved length of service. And then I will also put my cell phone number in the chat. I've been meeting with some providers across the state, and one of the things that I've said is, here's my cell phone number, and we want to be your partner. So if it's 9 o'clock on Friday night and you or your care team are having an issue with a member or feel like there's something we could do better, or we could help with, I want you to feel free to reach out and call me. So I'll put my cell phone number in the chat and feel free to use it. Just don't put it on eBay. Appreciate that. And I'll kick it over to Rondine.
And I guess a comment that I'd want to make here quick, and I know, Tom, you touched on it, and it's about members guiding their patients and residents to different MCOs. And I want to caution providers on that practice. We, as providers, we should not be directing our member or your patients or your residents to a specific plan. If your opinion is asked for by them or the family, I think you can provide them with factual information about each of the plans, but you should not be saying select this MCO. That's not something providers should be influencing decisions on, but you can provide factual information to help guide in the decision-making process of the resident or patient. And so just wanting to caution if that is happening, just making sure that you are appropriately responding to those requests from your residents and patients. So I think Ron Dean, I think you maybe wanted to add something there too.
Oh, no, I was just going to answer your questions. I don't know if you're ready for those yet. And I didn't send them over. I just came prepared to share because I didn't want everybody watching me dig around today. So
okay.
Whenever you're ready, it's fine.
That's fine. Yeah, we can go into the pre-submitted questions here. And so these questions, and I probably should have said it in the message, were sent by home health agencies or by a home health agency. Obviously, some of these questions could be used for multiple different disciplines. And so if you have a response for other disciplines, we would obviously welcome that as well. But the first question that was sent was, we are currently working on a contract and asking for a CMS 1500 versus a UB04. Will they take either form or specifically a 1500 is the question.
So we are, and Tom, keep me honest, we're asking for the 1500. You don't need to send in a UB, but being that it's a home health agency, are you accepting a UB as well, Tom?
I don't know the answer to that one, Ron.
Oh, no problem. So I confirmed with Mary today, so it's the 1500 okay. We're looking for. So
yeah.
Sorry to put you on the spot.
If they bill on the 1500, we don't need the, and Mary's sitting here and she's in the office today. So if they bill on the 1500, UB is not required.
And most of our agencies, I think, do bill on the UB currently with their other payers. And so would they continue to bill on the UB for Molina as well then?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Well, Brandon, I think if nursing homes, I think the clarity on nursing homes is if you have an assisted living unit that's billing out waiver services, those are on a 1500 form. So even if you're a nursing home, but if you're doing that, make sure that you're providing them with a 1500 form.
That's correct.
Thanks, Jim. The second question we have is regarding to the codes being billed. And this is again for home health agencies, just ensuring that G codes are the codes that providers will be submitting for home health.
That's correct. And it's off the Iowa Medicaid fee schedule. So I know there was some Wisconsin codes mentioned and that sort of thing. And so no, those would not be appropriate.
Yep. Perfect. Thank you. Do you have any thoughts or additional feedback on authorization requirements for some of the different home health disciplines or any nursing home either? I just want to add that.
Yeah, no problem. So yeah, Jill spoke a bit about our 90-day prior authorization process and that we're honoring the authorizations. Something that's a little bit different, and I think Jill touched on this as well, is beyond the 90 days. So if your authorization ends October 15th and not September 30th, we're honoring it until that October 15th date, which I know is something different than other MCOs have done in the past with continuity of care. As going forward, home health does require authorizations. And how many visits, Jill, do you know right off the top of your head, or that's something I might have to do a little more research on?
I want to quote update that later.
Yeah. So you will need going forward after the 90 days authorization for home health. You do have some visits in there before that authorization kicks in, and I'll get you the exact number.
Okay. And then so currently, it depends on the MCO that's providing the service. For Iowa Total Care, all the services are requiring authorization right now. For Amerigroup, they require service authorization for all services except for home health aid. Home health aid does not require prior auth at this point. And I think, obviously, the hope of providers is that that would be a practice that Molina would adopt as well, is the home health aide not requiring authorization. And so I don't know if you've considered that yet. I think we've talked about it in the past, or at least flagged it for the team. If that could be considered, that's something that I know one of the plans, and the plan that's been here the longest, has waived the requirement for. And that is mostly because of such a large percentage of those services being approved that they determined at that time, and have continued to determine, I suppose, that the auth wasn't warranted. So just food for thought, I suppose, as you're continuing to make some of those finalized decisions. That was one that I'm sure our home health team is, or our home health members are rooting for from Molina. So
I was in the meeting where they were cheering when that was mentioned.
That's so right.
I know that's popular.
That's right.
And we will. And, you know, I know that, you know, one of the other MCOs who's been here a while had a lot of, you know, claims data to base those decisions on. And so, you know, however we start out, not saying adjustments won't be made, you know, going forward for sure.
And just
one more thing on authorizations. We do have an FAQ on authorizations that we're just doing one revision for the state right now. And then, sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, I just muted it. Sorry.
Oh, okay. No, that's okay. So that was actually, we're sending it back for one revision, and then we'll get that out to you too, and it will be posted on our website as well. And it just gives you some of those exceptions for that 90 days that Jill was talking about, and also goes more in depth about some of these authorization questions. Because I know as a provider, I would want to know the exceptions, you know, like pharmacy or transplants, that sort of thing. There's a handful of BH codes. So we'll get that to you as well. I do have a state-approved claims and billing guide that we can provide, and that we've been providing for all the attendees of the orientation, but I can also get that to this group as well.
That would be great. No, we appreciate that. And I do see, Jill, you're following along the chat here and responding to some of the questions in there, so we appreciate that. And I do agree, at least on our home health front, the auths would be definitely for 60 days, because that's how long your cert periods are, so that makes sense. Another question that was submitted before was, will Molina be using that same authorization form as Iowa Total Care and Amerigroup? I think that was the uniform authorization. I assume that would carry forward to Molina as well, but just want to verify.
That's correct. We use the Iowa Universal Authorization Forms.
Awesome. Thank you for that. And then I think the last one that maybe hasn't gotten an answer yet, and if I check back further in the chat, it's in there, but how will they determine coordination of benefits in their system? In other words, will they accept the XB like Iowa Total Care, or are they expecting providers to add the Z7689 code to their claims? And I think you put that in there, Rondine, but I'll let you answer it anyways.
No problem. Yep, it's the Z, so we'll be following that diagnosis.
Okay. And then just wanting to clarify with you all, is that Z code, the requirement is that it goes in as a secondary diagnosis. And so when looking at the claims for providers, primary is obviously number one. Secondary is any diagnosis code that follows number one. So it doesn't necessarily need to go in slot two. It can go in any secondary diagnosis for the member. And so oftentimes I know that diagnoses that are placed in slots like 2 through 6 have impacts for the providers in other areas. And Julie, from our team, you can keep me honest on this one. I want to say it affects some of their quality ratings or something like that. And so just wanting to ensure, you may not see that Z code in some of those early secondary slots, because there are other impacts for agencies that have diagnoses that actually mean something to the patient in those areas. Whereas this is obviously just more of an administrative diagnosis, and you'll likely see it towards the end of the list of diagnoses that the patient has. So just wanting to throw that in there.
Yeah, Brandon, it's Julie, you're accurate. Those top slots impact money and how they're reimbursed. So it will not be in the first 4 to 6 slots. It will be last because it will impact their payment and how it's calculated in those top spots.
And that's more so on like the Medicare side, right? It impacts payment for those payer sources, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll always fall to the last. I'm sure they're defecting it to the last diagnosis code, wherever that sits. If they only have 3, it's going to be 3. If they have 10, it'll be 10.
Yeah. Okay. Just wanted to make sure and actually provide a little bit more clarification for the team. So, and then I see our last one. And I think you've already answered this one as well, but is there a rep that providers will be working with?
Yes. And actually they are, currently the ones that are presenting at the orientations right now, and they would love to meet with you. We do have a rep map, but it is not state approved. So you would have to just contact our general box, which is in the chat at iowaproviderrelations@molinahealthcare.com, and we'll get you connected with the rep in your county. But absolutely, they'll be your rep going forward. You know, we will be bringing on additional staff, so there might be some adjustments, but especially for the larger systems, that will stay the same. And we'd love to connect with you now. So now is the time to connect and meet with you. That's just much more pleasant than if you had an issue down the road and that was the first time we got to meet you. So we'd love to connect.
Thanks, Randy. I'm flipping through the chat now. I think most of the questions have been answered. I think one that I don't know if it was or not at this point is in regards to the Change Healthcare and the payer ID not being active. And I don't know if providers are wanting to test, how would that work with an ID that's not active, I guess?
Yeah, so that does seem a little confusing. So our testing, our claims testing that we're doing with round one and round two providers has nothing to do with that payer ID being live or the portal being live. So we actually test our clearinghouse's SSI, and we actually test through SSI with an 837 file from your clearinghouse, and we don't use the portal. So the portal will be live 7/1 because that is when a provider would need, you know, to get a prior authorization or, you know, to check on anything. So that portal does not go live. However, you don't have to, if you are already registered with Ability, you don't have to re-register. You can go and just choose Molina from the dropdown. So I know some providers have been a little concerned because they're like, we need time to, you know, get all set up. If you're already set up with Ability, you're good to go. But I hope that answers that question. So claims testing is very different than the live portal for how we'll go after
7/1. Okay. But I think that should answer. I know we had a couple members that operate out of state, so maybe they're just trying to, like you said, trying to get set up and everything in place prior to go live. And so I suppose if that should come in on 7/1 when the ID goes active. And so if we if that, we'll wait until that point, I suppose, to see that that's there. And I was just reading the last question that came in. Are you working with Ability and Avalon Clearinghouse as well? And I think the answer is probably yes.
Yes. Any clearinghouse, I would want to mention just really quick on EFT. So EFT is through ECHO, which is a partner of Change Healthcare. I would encourage, and I'm going to get you the form as soon as it's state approved, Brandon, so you can share with your membership, but I would really encourage you to sign up for EFT prior to go live. You can absolutely do that just by filling out a form for ECHO. The other way to sign up for EFT is to go out to the website and enroll online. However, if you plan to enroll that way, you'll have to wait till you receive your first check. So if I was a provider, I would not want a paper check to come through before I enrolled. So would really just encourage you to sign up for EFT. That is really the only thing that is, you know, would be great to do before go live. And we'll get you that form. We'll also have it on our website. But again, it's just not state approved today.
Awesome. Cool. Well, we have reached our 30-minute time frame. And I know you guys likely have meetings. And I know we have a call immediately following this. So I just want to thank the team from Molina for joining us again this month. We appreciate you guys taking the time and look forward to working with you, especially as we go live 7/1. So any questions, feel free to reach out. I can make sure that we route them to the team at Molina if you don't already have your provider rep. And then they obviously shared information for the provider rep general mailbox that you could obviously send questions to as well. So thanks for joining us,
Brandon, again. Thanks for allowing us to join your membership on this call. These are always helpful for us.
Good deal. All right. We'll talk next month.
Have a great day.
Bye.